The Endgame is here, so I'm here with three friends to discuss it. Today I'm joined by Jamario Simmons, Ben Chris, and Nick Weiss to discuss Avengers Endgame. This is Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. Hello and welcome to episode 23 of Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. I am Scott, and as the intro indicates, I am being joined by three friends today rather than one or two. Two familiar faces, both Ben Christ and Jamario Simmons, and Nick Weiss, and we're talking Endgame. Pretty simple setup. I hope you enjoy our conversation. We're talking the highest of the highs, our favorite jokes, and where we think the MCU goes from here. Have fun, everybody. All right, we're getting started.
I like to do stuff off the rip.
Yes, off the rip. So I'm here with Ben Chris. Our other two guests today are late, so they will
late
be shamed.
As fuck.
Yeah, they'll be shamed accordingly. And today we're talking Avengers Endgame, and the game is simple. A moment you really liked, we'll call it the fist pump moment, joke you really liked, and then a theory or thought about the MCU moving forward. So general thoughts, I think we all pretty much really liked the movie.
I would say so. I think they had a unimaginable task to try and put an ending on a total of 12 movies.
Yeah.
And somehow managed to stick the landing in a way that was ultimately satisfying, if a little bit drawn out. What was truly impressive to me was the way that they were able to tie together so many different loose threads, especially certain aspects of the MCU that I hadn't thought about in a while. Everything kind of had a nice bow on it by the end, and I was very impressed with the ability to not only stick the landing, but also make the last movie matter, because there was a real chance that they could really invalidate a lot of the consequences from Infinity War, and they managed to make that movie better by sticking to their guns and actually making the first half kind of a really dour movie. It's a very gray paletted movie. Everyone's sad. Everyone's trying to just kind of move on and really, you know, feel a whole new world where it's no, like, half of the world gone, and they do a really good job of making that authentic in a way.
They literally send Captain America to a grief counseling meeting.
He leads one. Also, yeah. Nick Weiss is here now.
With the directors, joined by a late Nick Weiss.
dressed in athletic wear.
Yes, like you do.
Yep.
But yeah, so, you know,
supporting healthy listening.
There you go.
Thank God someone is.
Always listen responsibly. but yeah, I agree in terms of the MC, in terms of, you know, just tying things in. There's a lot of, they brought back a bunch of, like, characters that you didn't necessarily expect to see.
They actually did a callback to Thor 2, which is underrated, but yeah.
Unnecessary, but they didn't have to do that.
Yeah. Ben is willing to die in the Thor 2 hill.
That is my cross to bear.
It's a weird hill to die on.
Fandom of both Iron Man 2 and Thor 2.
The worst movies in the series.
Iron Man 3 is worse than Iron Man 2.
Completely disagree, but
that's
okay.
You're just wrong.
Yep. Sticking by my guns there.
Yes, that you are. Okay.
You know what Iron Man needed? More whips.
Hell yeah! More bad Russian accents. Book it into my veins,
Let's have an entire joke around the accent that's about a Boyd.
Yeah! Mickey Rourke can't do an accent?
No,
then
he can't.
Just go lean into it.
No, he can't. He sounded like he was like half in a James Bond movie, half in a Bronx Tale.
What year was that? 2010?
Yeah,
2010 was a crazy year, man.
It was a crazy year.
Everyone was like, Mickey Rourke's back! And he was for about a movie and a half.
Okay,
but,
so
yeah.
Okay, so Ben, what was a big-time fist pump moment for you? It doesn't have to be one of the big ones. It can be whatever you like.
The introduction of Professor Hulk, I thought,
was
phenomenal.
Great.
There are a lot of other moments that I loved, and I knew this one was coming, but I just loved how casual they were about it. In that, like, a smash cut to a restaurant, and there he is, and he's just like, well, you know, I had thoughts about it, and it was just like, if I just hit myself with more radiation, like, this should all work. And that was it. That you just, he's Professor Hulk now. He's Smart Hulk. Like, there was no, like, internal struggle about it. It was just like, this is my life
they,
now.
They did some sci-fi hand-waving. Yeah. It was very Star Trek Voyager.
Yeah.
We just used more tachyon particles. It's just like, oh, okay.
Well, yeah, I in particular really like, I really like it just because not only is it just that we get to just straight up have Professor Hulk, but it is done in such a... Because it's so blasé, it actually makes it funnier.
Yeah.
The reveal is funnier because you're like, oh, wait. It's like, it doesn't get the reveal of, like, Stormbreaker or anything like that, you know? It's like, no origin story, kind of just like, I figured it out. Like, that was it.
I did it, and now I'm going to be really bad at science for the rest of the film.
You know that gigantic plot point from the last movie that was like, we were wondering what would happen? Yeah, I just mind-melded myself, kind of.
Well, yeah, there's 3 hours here. We don't really have enough time to analyze the Hulk. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I absolutely enjoyed how the movie in general was just like, oh, you didn't see the previous several movies? Get fucked. I'm like, bye.
There was no effort. We're moving.
This is an incomprehensible film to anyone who has not seen at least four or five of these
movies. I have already told a few people, you haven't seen the previous two, you're not allowed to see this movie. Don't do
you
it.
You won't know.
You will have a bad time.
It's not even the previous two Avengers movies. Like, if you haven't seen several of the other standalone superhero films, it's going to make you very lost.
You can kind of... I feel like...
I don't think they even call Captain Marvel Captain Marvel at any point, do they?
I don't think they do.
Do they even say Carol? Or yeah, they just say like, Carol. Do they? Okay. Yeah. Because, like, they really, like, no one says anybody's names. That's what kind of blew me away.
Yeah, well, yeah, they are going kind of on, like, the baseline kind of comic assumption, which is, like, you're in on this already. So they do kind of hand wave, but I think the thing that's so, they're basically like, hey, if you didn't see the last movie, why would you be here anyway? None of this would make sense anyway, so we're just going to lean in, and then they go for broke. All right, Nick, what is your... We've had Professor Hulk. What is your... A big moment that you really like?
Hammer. Obviously the hammer. It's the hammer.
It's Captain America with the hammer.
I can't believe Ben said anything else besides Captain America and the hammer.
I knew that somebody else would want that, so I wanted to highlight one of the other moments that may not get
a deeper
much
cut
love.
For the comic fans. That's why Ben is here.
Okay.
Because I pretend to read more comics than I actually do, and Ben actually reads
them. Oh, you're
a
fake comic girl? Awesome.
Yes. I'm also
fake
a booth
babe. Yeah, exactly. There you go.
I'm also a booth babe.
Yeah, you can't see it, but Scott is in just a bikini here.
Yeah.
He looks really good.
Free
sample of Red Bull.
Yeah. Turns out we're recording this podcast behind a stand and repeat, and there are people waiting to get pictures.
They want us to leave. We're not going to.
I can't. Yeah, the favorite jokes part is going to come up later. But that led just two excellent moments from Thor, where he says in like pitch perfect, "That's a friend. He's a friend from work." Yeah, like I knew it all along. Screaming that,
excited Thor is the best Thor.
Yeah,
well, I think Nick and I have talked about this separately. That is actually like a payoff from 10 movies ago.
Yep,
where the hammer.
It was Age of Ultron.
The one good moment from Age of Ultron.
I think the pan around when they're all fighting off the robots together.
Sure,
but certainly nothing involving Ultron.
Yeah, that's a whole other podcast.
But I will admit that it is very flawed, but I like it.
Yeah, that's fine. Hey, man, I like Iron Man too. That's okay. I get it. We all have our sins.
Keep standing.
Yeah. I'll stand it. It's cool shit.
But yeah, no, I mean, obviously that was a huge payoff. And it's something that they did a good job in even just the lead-in with the shots. It's like, okay, hammer, Thor. And you think, oh, it's definitely going to be Thor. And then you see it move and you're like, what the? And then it shows, because Cap does the thing he does with the shield.
Yep.
Like the kind of recoil that he does when he brings it in. Well, no,
the hammer shield combo was everything 10-year-old Nick wanted forever.
It's everything 32-year-old Scott wants now.
Yes,
yeah. And 10-year-old Scott.
Yeah, he was
a decent thunder god, and that's all I ever wanted.
Yeah. He was the best thunder. That and then just the small moment where they, like, in the middle of the battle, Thor was just like, you keep the little one. You get the little one.
Yes.
I do enjoy the Thor, that was a Thor 2 callback, where he's like, all right, I love you, Mom. Throws his hands up. Nothing. He's like, yeah, it takes a second.
I like this. She's like, his mom's like, yeah, this usually takes a moment. Rocket's like, what are we waiting for? Like, I don't understand. Yeah, so that's a good one. Highlight for you, sir, for Jamario?
Oh, geez. I just had it and I lost it. That's not a bad thing. No, not the hammer. Oh, yes. Not so much a hype moment, but just a really awesome moment and hammering in the, how this character... I guess I ran into that, huh?
Nailed it.
We're doing it. Just really pinning down the how this character is when they land on... forget the planet, but when you see... When you see Quinn just dancing to music.
Quill, just dancing
to music. That's such a good callback to the first Guardians, and it's filmed so well, and it's like, of course, if you're an outside person, you're like, who the hell is this jackass?
Just, it was wonderful on multiple levels because it was a callback to both that opening scene and just the way that everybody treated the Guardians in that first movie.
Yes,
like,
just like
who the fuck are you people? What are you doing?
Well, it's also what I think it's a great job. It's like they kind of do the intro for a hot second, but then they pull, and in that moment, like the music is the score. But then they just make it so it's only in Quill's headphones, and so you just see him going, like, dancing around, so they have no context.
Yeah.
Whatsoever.
And he's singing horribly, so it's just like, everybody has been in that moment. I'm just like, I am by myself, and I'm just going to belt this out and pretend to, like, and dance all around. And that's the worst fear in the world, that somebody will see you do that. And so, of course, superheroes do that, too.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Now, when I do that, I don't think a cyborg lady is going to knock me out. But, yeah, it's a fear.
Done so well, too, that it just makes you wonder, like, did they film this right when they were filming Guardians?
Because
it's such a smooth, seamless transition.
Yeah, I mean, it's that kind of thing where they, for all of these, they have enough footage and enough, like, roll and enough budget that they can just kind of roll through any former movie, pull in the sets, pull in the people, and then just do whatever they want.
Yeah, the amount of homages?
Homages
to the other Marvel movies is really impressive, and like, if it wasn't done so joyfully, it would kind of be not campy, but kind of like pretentious and kind of redundant, like, oh, we're gonna just go into look back on all of our marvelous films, like that, right, kind of way.
Yeah.
But instead it's just
yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, it's not, there wasn't grandstanding.
Yeah, so they're just having fun with it, you know, in a way that, as I said, if you've seen the other 12 of these movies, you can really, like, appreciate, like, the other Hulk moment I loved was when they go back to 2012 New York to get the Infinity Stone.
Oh, amazing.
And they're like, maybe you should do a little Hulk smash on the way. And he just, the most, like, tame, like, Hulk smash as he just sort of barely flips a taxi cab and just kind of growls. Like, I'm not this person anymore.
I know we're skipping ahead on this, but can we talk about how funny the Hulk jokes are generally in this?
We'll get to that. We have favorite jokes coming up. Okay. So it's best moment, best joke. Jamario Simmons has also joined us, for those of you listening.
Hi, yeah.
So we've all filtered in, like, you know, it's a sitcom and everyone's got a new plot point.
I definitely Kramered this
Speaking
entire podcast.
But yeah, and we'll definitely talk jokes, and because Hulk does have most of the best jokes in the film. My personal favorite moment is the sequence where it's just Cap, Broken Shield against Thanos.
Amazing.
That shot with him just solo against Thanos and an army is great. And then you see all the portals open. That was like, I squealed like a child about 4 or 5 times, but that was Cap with the hammer was one, and that, and all the portals opening and everybody just kind of coming out all at
people
once.
People clapped in my theater.
Oh, there was a big pop.
It happened. Yeah,
there you go.
That was pretty, because it just it panned to everybody.
Yeah,
like
everybody
it was, here. Here are the Doctor Strange people. Here are the Black Panther people.
Yeah, here's Wakanda.
Here's Wakanda.
Here's the Guardians.
Here's the Guardians. Like, just everybody. Everyone is here, and it was just like that kind of moment, and then just going from that to like Avengers Assemble, and then slow motion everybody running and everything.
Yeah.
Just amazing. Oh, made me so
amazing. I know,
so happy.
Well, like, and that's the thing. I feel like that something that the Not that the Russos, I think the Russos have done a great job, but I feel like I've seen like some critiques where it's like they weren't good at necessarily pulling in like what they dubbed the splash panel moments.
I get that.
You know, like the big shots.
I get
the big shots.
It.
Like they have, like for instance, airport fight is really good. But there's
airport fight from Civil War.
Civil War is really good. But in terms of like the biggest best moment is Giant Man.
Yeah.
But it's I can't really say that like, oh, that looked really, you know, kind of just shows up out of nowhere. But here the lead in and the shots and then it just assemble. Whoosh.
Yeah. It's I don't know. I thought they did a pretty good job. And realistically, it's the final fight isn't much of a fight as much as it is. It's like, here's your favorites doing their thing as like it cuts from person doing a cool thing to person doing a cool thing.
Which I'm
to
fine
person
with.
Doing a cool
I'm
thing.
Fine
yeah.
With
yeah.
Which
I, awesome. I would say actually, you know, if we take my previous answer of, you know, favorite moment, maybe I could say the Quill sequence was a favorite joke. That whole entire sequence. It was
the whole entire sequence
of, hey, now you have the gauntlet, and it's passing from this person to this person to this person. And it's awesome because it's like, all right, here's the final rally, and it's kind of like a crazy, like at the end of sitcoms and like their final episode here. It's like, all right, now here's this one character running out doing that thing that everybody loves. Now here's this next character doing that thing that everybody loves.
Yeah.
It was a good showcase of just like, all right, we know what you're here for, and there that is.
Yeah,
there's a lot.
Everyone really kind of got their moment to shine, and one thing I really loved was I kept forgetting, but Scarlet Witch is powerful, y'all.
Dude, like, she is broken.
Everyone was saying, Captain Marvel is going to be the one to beat up on Thanos, and it's like, oh right, Scarlet Witch is terrifying. I totally forgot.
Yeah,
because in the comics. My biggest issue with Scarlet Witch is that they really had no idea how to no one really does know how to handle her powers. Well, because in the comics, it's like...
reality manipulation.
It's luck.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's like it affects your luck. And
yeah.
It kind of just kind of...
It's a hodgepodge.
As a hodgepodge of things. And as Nick said, it more or less became reality warping in the MCU. And that worked because, like, I remember
she's kind of a Jean Grey character.
A little bit, yeah.
Like, it's mostly... Telekinesis.
I mean, let's be fair. That's pretty much what they're using her for.
Because she's like pulling stuff apart and tossing
stuff
and
because in
stuff
Infinity
around.
War, she fucks up those big blade things.
Well, she uses it to
destroy
Black Order.
It's that awesome sequence where she just jumps down and smashes Okoye. It was like, you had her up there the entire time?
How is she not out here? like a real, real good question.
You kept her up there the entire time.
Yeah. But just the moment where she's like, you took everything from me. I don't know who you are. You fucking will, and then smashing him. Oh, so fun.
Yeah, that was pretty great.
Yeah.
All right, so now we're going to go for jokes. We're going to start different order. Nick, your favorite joke.
Stairs!
Yeah.
Stairs.
Oh,
yeah,
you stole mine, but...
Too many stairs.
Oh, hate stairs.
I yell laughed at that moment.
Yeah.
Yes.
No, that is one of those things. I've talked about this a lot, but any time that a studio is, or a script or anything is willing to throw... somebody's at least seven people's yearly salary at a 5-second joke.
Yeah,
I kind of love it.
Pretty good. I it just everything kind of from that that whole 2012 sequence was really fun and like a nice reminder. Like Iron Man making Ant-Man give himself a heart attack. Like just all these little fun touches as they're trying to do like a heist movie and get in, get out and
time heist.
And then just the fact that he just gets fucking wrecked by the Hulk. Like just the payoff of that brick joke was real good.
Because so
I totally forgot about it. I was like, oh right, it would take him a while to get down those stairs.
Even the Hulk
it would take a while. It's a big ass building.
Well, it's kind of a good throwback to like it's one of those funny things that you don't. I love seeing the logic of the superhero used in absurd situations. So it's like it's the antithesis of it's the other end of like Gotham Central.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, how does something like this how does the Hulk navigate going up and down buildings? He cannot fit in an elevator and stairs.
Oh yeah, I love it.
Like,
I love it when
can't
movies
just destroy stuff.
But movies refuse to go like, all right, let's not suspend disbelief for a second.
Yeah.
Isn't this stupid? Let's show how stupid this is.
Well, it's like I got reminded of like the robot in RoboCop. You know, it's like
right,
this big death machine and it can't navigate stairs.
Yeah.
It just can't figure it. It just starts squealing like a baby thing.
Amazing.
Yeah, I think that they I think you mentioned it earlier, Scott, one of the big questions with the Hulk was how are they going to handle the Hulk afraid of Thanos? And they were just kind of, they didn't worry about it. I don't think Hulk ever actually fought Thanos in Endgame at all. Did he? I don't remember.
No, not really. Yeah. He was busy. He uses the gauntlet once. He then holds up basically the headquarters by himself. And then he's part of the main charge, but... Not too much going on there.
Yeah, like it was.
He didn't really need to smash. It wasn't, you know, he got his time in by getting a little bit more character development and sciencing.
Yeah. And that was kind of what they needed him for in this movie, especially with all of the pseudoscience going on, like every about 5-10 minutes.
Yeah, what I like, I've been listening to nothing but just, you know, spoiler talk and stuff about it is. With the casting choice of Mark Ruffalo, they did a really good job of getting Hulk. They're showcasing that Hulk is totally just kind of a dorky scientist guy. You don't have your edgelord, and you don't have someone who's like, I can't really see this, but...
Eric Bana.
Yeah, exactly. Endgame does a really good job of kind of marrying the two, where it's like, yeah, I'm a big green guy, like the sequence of when they're in the cafe... And they're taking a pic, and this fan's come up and take a picture.
Wonderful bit. Yeah,
I'm Ant-Man. Great. You want no? Really, he's kind of cool now. That's cool now. Give him back the goddamn gown.
Yeah. Paul Rudd is a champion in this movie.
Yes, yeah. He is. Shout outs to that rat that saved the universe.
Yeah. That was really fortunate.
Yeah, that rat happened that just triggered the thing that let Ant-Man out. Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. But yeah, Jamari, I think you mentioned your favorite joke. Was that the
I'll double down on it because there's some good ones. The whole Fat Thor sequence.
Amazing.
Fat Thor is great stuff.
Really, really, really good. And just the fact that Hemsworth, like, God bless the MCU for figuring out that Chris Hemsworth is funny. And, like, he doesn't give a shit.
I honestly believe somebody saw, like, somebody's just like, oh, yeah, we can do whatever we need with Chris, and he's doing some standard stuff. Like, Thor 2 is still, like, he's still funny, but then he was in, like, Ghostbusters, the female Ghostbusters movie, and everyone's like, oh, shit, he's hilarious.
Very, very funny.
Oh, we need to use this entirely. And so that's why it's like Taika Waititi shows up. He's like, yeah, riff. They heard it like even possibly my favorite joke from Thor 2 is Thor looking at the coat rack and hanging up his hammer.
Yeah,
that was apparently improvised by Chris Hemsworth. Yeah,
so that whole scene from Ragnarok where he's picking out where he's going through weapons that he likes.
Yeah,
that was all improvised too.
He's good at it. Yeah,
he can hang. And I think that they did a really good job of just taking an idea that could be kind of, you know, boring in one note, oh, Thor's fat now, and kind of used it as a way to sort of show, like, Thor is just completely depressed and fucked up.
Well, yeah, that's, I think the thing that this movie does a really good job of is that the scenes that seem to, like, that seem slower have purpose by the end of the movie. So, like, it's like, oh, why is Cap keep looking at pictures of Peggy, like, Agent Carter? Like, why does that keep happening? Oh, I understand it now. Why does Tony Stark seem to have all of these emotional moments, including a resolution with his father? I don't know.
Yeah, having Howard Stark explicitly say, I hope my son...
Knows how much I care about him
and does the greater good instead of being selfish. And then Tony's arc ends literally with him sacrificing himself for the universe.
Yeah, shouts to Roger Sterling.
Yeah. Exactly. And so
I love that actor.
Yeah. All of that... But yeah, they do a great job with all of the payoffs. In terms of my favorite jokes, I've mentioned this before. The entire the entire sequence with Cap fighting himself
is
amazing.
Great. It's the funniest Cap. I think this is the most fun Cap has ever been.
I can go all day. I know.
I just love it. He goes, you gotta be shitting me. That's how it opens. He then starts fighting himself. Like, I can do this all day. I know. And then finally gets him to, he basically pulls a Vader on himself.
Yeah.
He goes, Bucky is alive. And then, that is America's ass. And
that's so good. He says it with more of a, like, that is America's ass.
Yeah. Well, my favorite Cap, he had so many good moments and so many good lines, but I loved the callback to the elevator scene.
Yes. It was a double whammy because it was not only a callback to that whole elevator sequence, just the fact that they got everybody back in there. Stillwater, Grillo, they got everybody. Like, even I think the goons were the same.
They got Robert Redford back.
Yeah, Robert Redford back.
And just to give you an idea as to how much of a misdirect it was, the same guys that shot that scene, they used the same exact shot sequence.
That's what I thought. They used the same exact shot sequence.
It was so eerily familiar. And then Hail Hydra. And then walks out carrying the thing.
It's like, good. It was both a callback to Winter Soldier and to that unfortunate Secret Empire.
Yes.
Which we are not going to discuss.
And here's the thing. Honestly, like, I didn't read enough
of
Secret
Empire.
It doesn't matter.
I didn't read enough of Secret Empire to get truly mad about it, but for me, I'm like, well, it was worth it if we get that joke.
Yeah. In the end, it worked out.
Because I was just like, oh, yeah, people were mad about that.
Yep. I not to digress too much, but I was like, I'll see where this goes. And then they were like, it didn't go anywhere good. And I was like, well, okay, cool. Fuck. And so that's Secret Empire in a nutshell.
Yeah,
oh my God. The fact that they just, I thought for sure we were going to get that exact same fight, but it's amazing how many, just as they go through each of those movies, just the murderer's row of actors and actresses.
Yeah, you
all
really
perfectly casted. Like from Michelle, not Michelle, was that Michelle? No, Rene Russo as Thor's mom. You've got Frank Grillo as Skullbone or Crossbones. You've got Stillwater as the evil agent. Robert Redford, just across the board, just hitters everywhere you look.
I forgot that Tilda Swinton was.
Tilda Swinton!
I was like, oh, yeah. I feel warm inside now.
Yeah, like just real good just to know that during the whole Battle of New York, she was just like, please get off of my tutor. Like, just throwing people off of that brownstone.
That little hint that, yeah, there were other people there at the Battle of New York who were also kicking ass. You just didn't see them.
Like, yeah. New York is very big, as it turns out.
Yeah, exactly. and it also emphasizes the idea. It's like, yeah, we saw six people.
Yeah,
basically, it's like there were other things going on.
Yeah,
and you could slide it out of the place if you really wanted to.
Pretty easily.
Yeah,
I think for me, gosh, I don't even know. My favorite joke, America's ass, is just so good.
That's a good one.
Like, that's so
in so many ways.
So perfect. And I'm trying to think like what other ones kind of stood out to me. Thor going up. I went for the head after beheading Thanos was pretty good.
Chris Hemsworth's delivery wasn't funny to me.
No, it wasn't. It was sad.
Because he wavers at the... He pulls a Shatner. He pulls a Shatner from Wrath of Khan where he just goes, it's like, I went for the head. Like, he tails
that
off.
That entire moment is so good for several reasons. A couple being that the movie starts off, you know, you want everyone kind of wants the, you know, you want the big bad guy to get their comeuppance. You want them, to suffer. And the movie just starts off with Thanos just getting his shit kicked the fuck in and done. That's it. And it's also awesome, too, because as soon as you do it, you see everyone just kind of go, oh, fuck. Now what? Completely done.
Yeah, and that was a huge surprise too. Like fucking emaciated Thanos at the end of that movie, and they just straight up murder him. Like
that's how the movie starts.
Yeah, they take him down, and it's like, well, oh,
there goes that thing that you wanted.
I thought we were gonna. Well, I guess they did win. Cool.
Yeah,
but they won in a way. It was a Pyrrhic victory. They murdered Thanos, but he got what he wanted. Like, it's done.
Yeah,
and I loved. That's one of the things I loved. Like,
they subverted the quick fix.
Yeah, going back to 2014. And then having that era's Thanos be like, oh, fuck, I won. Like, I did it. Everything worked.
That's one of my favorite moments where one of his, like, his telekinetic guy, I'm forgetting his name.
The Maw.
The Maw. And so he's just like, but you died. He goes, I did it.
Yeah, I know that I won.
He is still unrelenting. And so what I think is interesting is, like, Thanos doesn't have, obviously, as much to do in this movie because he's not the protagonist this time around. Now, granted, that doesn't mean the hero. But here, he's very much like, oh, okay. Oh, I had a flaw in my plan. Like, I like that. That's so on brand for Thanos. He's just like, oh, I had a flaw in my plan. Like, everybody still, I had infinite power and just assumed eliminating it would be enough. Clearly it wasn't. Mm-hmm. Now I've got to come down and actually eliminate everybody.
Now I've got to kill everyone.
Yes.
Like, that was a good amendment to his original plan because, like, yeah, I forgot about that where he just, says, you know, the biggest thing was I thought everyone would be grateful. I never thought that there would be people who still wanted to take things back to the way they were after they experienced this wonderful life I gave them. And so, like, that having him realize, instead of being like, oh no, I was wrong, having him then go, no, I gotta fucking double down on this, was a great character moment and really kind of fit in.
It raises the stake. It does a good job of raising the stakes for the movie and also establishing that, hey, no, Thanos is totally the villain, because, you know, in Infinity War, you kind of get this aspect of, like, all right, his intentions were good, and, you know, I can sympathize with what he's wanted to do.
He's the mad good, titan for good, a reason.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah. And I think this is something that's been said about, like, a lot of good comic book villains don't view themselves as the villain.
No. Exactly.
Like, it, because...
Magneto, the best comic book villain, believes he's
the hero. One of the best, in Killmonger and Black Panther, like, they don't view themselves as...
Killmonger probably saw himself as the bad guy.
Towards the end, he was just like, you know what?
By the end, basically, him, he was just like, initially, no, he's like, no, it's like, I'm here to start the revolution, basically. Like, that's...
In a selfish way.
Killmonger had some good points, but I don't think he saw himself as the hero.
I mean, I don't think he viewed himself as heroic, but I think he viewed himself as a necessary evil, like Thanos does. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah,
let's not start on Killmonger, because that's a whole other fucking podcast right
there. We already did one of those, and we're still not done.
Never done with Michael B. Jordan. Come back, baby.
I do want to point out that I think that Paul Rudd is an underrated MVP of this movie.
Paul Rudd's the protagonist of this movie.
Yeah, essentially.
Like, there's a strong argument to be made for that, actually.
Ant-Man is the hero of this film. I really liked that they actually aged up his daughter, and, like, there was
that,
this...
The moment where he... Hit. The moment... Like, there's moments in the movie where you... because Paul Rudd's mostly known for just being, like, a funny, affable guy who can, you know, throw him in any movie and he'll be good and he'll be, you know, likable. Because he's Paul fucking Rudd, but the moment where he meets his daughter and she's like grown up and they embrace, and then you see the look over her shoulder of his face, and I was just like, he's acting a literal impossible situation.
Yeah,
right. Where he is currently processing the fact that he lost all that time.
Before he doesn't realize that he's the one that's been missing.
He has felt
5 hours go by.
And can we talk about how wonderfully they shot that? They did no exposition at all. They just took him to different places and showed us the aftermath of the snap to allow him to experience.
That's kind of why he was perfect, because he's the fish out of water character. So they have this giant memoriam. And they don't say, oh, this is the snap memorial, like the Thanos memoriam or anything like that, which I don't think they call it after Thanos.
Yeah,
but
the snap memoriam.
Yeah.
It's like those we lost.
Yeah, those we lost, but they don't mention anything of the sort. But, yeah, it was just all, I think you're right. I think they do a good job. It's like, because also, you don't really need a ton of exposition. It's just him discovering what's going on and then kind of filling in the blanks as to how they're going to fix it.
It was wonderful show, don't tell. It was really good.
And it makes sense too, just because you lose half of everything in existence. No, it's not going to do the typical cartoon comic book thing where it's like, all right, world's getting back to normal. It's like, no, shit's fucked up. Everything is completely in disarray and people are just doing the best they can to just kind of get by. And, you know, when he sees, like, a kid riding his bike, he's like, hey, what's going on?
What happened here?
What happened here? And the kid's like
what are you talking about? Yeah. Well, I've always found this to be the case, that time travel movies are one of the easiest things, where that's an element, are one of the easiest things to screw up.
Yes.
Because if you just kind of establish a logic to some extent. Now,
and then you have to stay by your own logic, and no one ever stays by their own logic.
Yeah, almost nobody ever does. Yeah.
Although I would love to point out that they tried to do a red herring in this movie, where it was just like, all right, so here's how time works. Oh, it doesn't work like Back to the Future? No, that's stupid. It doesn't work like Back to the Future. And then the entire thing ends up being a giant Back to the Future moment throughout the rest of the movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's essentially like a big Back to the Future 2, which... I honestly don't even like that movie too much, but I liked this version of that movie.
I don't think you'll ever see that IMDb description of Avengers.
It's like Back to the Future 2, but with the Avengers.
Right,
but good.
But, psst, but
that'll be a user review.
Tell them that we said that.
That's a user review coming in hot real soon.
Right. I'm sure someone's
downvote.
Yeah, but like, there's like a couple of instances where they kind of fudge with it, but the main instance they fudge with it is Cap's ending, and I'm like, I don't care. I just don't.
Yeah.
Because they gave Cap a happy ending, which he deserved.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Old Cap.
Yeah, old Cap. He actually got to be old and have a life and, you know, not be sad all the time. Because I forget where I saw that, but just like one of somebody mentioned in the MCU, the undercurrents, like, all the characters are always consistent, but something consistent about Cap is that Cap is just sad all the time. Mm-hmm. He is never not sad because he doesn't really have a place. And so he's just like, well, I guess I'll go fight whoever I can fight.
Yeah.
I don't know.
That's all he has to do. He's directionless.
Exactly. And that's why like when people, you know, I remember, but even for Infinity War, people were like, oh, Cap's going to die.
I called it. That was one of my long shots.
Yeah, I'd never, and this is the thing, I never thought Cap was going to die because he kind of did that already. Because that's his origin, is him sacrificing himself for the greater good. but yeah. But instead they replaced his death with Tony, and I think that's a much stronger one. And also the gutsiest one
imagine. And just a beautiful character arc. Beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, it's kind of an odd, not odd payoff, but it's a very similar payoff to the first Avengers film. Because Tony, you know, takes the nuke up into the portal, throws it at the alien ship, it blows up, and he seems to leave life for until the Hulk yells CPRs him into existence.
Yeah.
Tony Stark has been trying to wipe himself out for the longest amount of time in... Y'all wouldn't let him.
No. He's been trying to self-destruct, like, unintentionally for the longest time, and now he did it intentionally for real, and it actually meant something.
He finally did it.
Yes. I'm not sure what the theater was like where you were when that happened for me, but there was a lot of crying.
Oh, we had tears. We had tears.
There was open weeping, not just tears and sniffles, like... for like 10 straight minutes, which is a testament to how much people love Robert Downey Jr. in the role.
Well, yes, and also having Peter Parker there at the same time, I think just like crushed it.
That was a really good reversal of the end of Infinity War.
Yeah, that was there were two parts that almost made me cry, because my theater, it was a big, cushy IMAX and super intimate.
No crying in IMAX.
It was super intimate, so everyone was just kind of, like, really paying attention and just being absorbed by it. But that scene where, you know, Spider-Man comes up, says his piece, and then Pepper kind of comes up, he's like, you're going to be okay. And I'm like...
Yeah, we're going to be okay.
Yeah, we're going to be okay. And I was strung on, like, really? And when she started crying, I was like, no, damn.
Yeah, and then it actually kind of brings us into the future of the MCU, which is... Have you guys seen the trailer for Spider-Man Far From Home?
I just watched it today.
Yes.
Okay. So, I do like that they put a spoiler ahead, like a spoiler warning ahead from Tom Holland, who's like, hey, if you haven't seen Endgame... Do not watch this.
What makes that a doubly funny is that
he's Tom, the spoiler king.
That's yes. Interviews, they have to just stop him because they're like, "Yo, you're you idiots."
They have said on multiple occasions they have never given him a full script, like for Endgame, because he kept just popping over. Oh, sorry. Like, he's just too excited. He's just too young and too excited.
I remember they had Benedict Cumberbatch, like, with him on a whole bunch of interviews because he had to babysit him just to keep him from...
I mean, it made sense because they had all these scenes together. But right. Also, yeah, you definitely had to babysit. Which, I think if anyone's going to babysit, the combo of Benedict Cumberbatch and Robert Downey Jr. is pretty great. And then, of course, later it would be like Mark Ruffalo, who's also there. Like, come on, Mark. We barely got the kid to shut up, and now you're just running your mouth.
What's really interesting is that, found this out today, is that a lot of the actors, they didn't know how their character arc was going to end, because since they filmed both movies at the same time and they filmed them in different parts, they were like, I don't know what happened to my character. So
I see, yeah.
So that's why... the whole everything was kind of kept up in the wraps, and it lasted so good. It did a really good job of not spoiling itself. None of the actors actually did that, and no footage leaked out because no one knew how it was actually
going to happen. Well, yeah, Brie Larson admitted she didn't even know she was in Endgame. She had no idea which Avengers movie she was in. She just knew that she filmed some stuff for it, and she did her solo movie, but she had no idea exactly how it tied in. And it makes sense, because her role is like, she kind of comes in, helps them take out Thanos the first time, comes in, takes out an entire carrier by herself, and then grapples with Thanos for a bit.
Right.
But who's to say what scene that would, what movie
that could have been either.
It could have been either one. So who the hell knows? But yeah, no, that was.
I'm glad they treated her character properly, because she's one of, her and Scarlet Witch are both problem characters, where it's like, yo, these are, they are the answers to the situation.
Yeah, they're trump cards. Like they're nerfed. They're completely nerfed. Which is why it's like, oh, okay, like. Looking forward, I like the idea. They're like, oh, yeah, Scarlet Witch is going to have adventures with Vision, and it's somehow going to be in the 50s, which I heard somebody suggest the idea that it's just going to be like some illusion that she's created for herself. It's going to be weird and psychedelic, and I'm like, I'm all in. Yeah, do that.
Literally the most and only sense, to be honest.
Like, David Lynch meets superheroes. Like, that would be...
Oof, I don't like that at all.
Take it back.
I just heard yet another... angry plot analysis of Twin Peaks season 3, and it's just like there's literal scenes of 5 minutes where nothing is happening. I don't want that,
David Lynch.
David Lynch, who is probably one of the most famous directors, he's like, I'm never going to tell you what anything means. I don't want to.
That is a man that needs all of the wranglers on the planet, because if you let him remove his limiters, it is just nothing but confusion from anyone.
I know, it's so rough, because then you eventually get something like, it's not Twin Peaks, but it's something akin to it. And you're just like...
Twin Peaks season 3 is David Lynch Unchained.
Well, it's not even Twin Peaks, it's not even, I understand Twin Peaks, but there's one, it's like Empire Falls or some other project that he did, where it's just like, it's all shot on like new digital, but it's shot like reality television. And it's it's basically, imagine all of the weirdest elements of the original Twin Peaks show, and then they're just like, yeah, Walk Fire with Me wasn't weird enough. We're going to toss some more at it.
And you want this for the Super?
No, I more like the idea of it kind of, honestly, I would prefer not a 50s, but more like a 60s kind of spy adventure thing with Vision and Wanda.
I think you just want to see Elizabeth Olsen in a go-go dress, but you know, whatever.
She is the best Olsen. I mean, confirmed now, the best Olsen child.
Yes. No. No. No doubt whatsoever.
Like that is cemented in history.
It's, yeah.
Well done. What a hero.
Hero. Yeah. Well, and it seems like that show is just one kind of brick in the wall in terms of all of these shows that they're going to be starting at Disney Plus now, which seems to be like basically what the MCU is going to be for a bit, because they don't seem to have, they haven't really announced any of the films outside of the new Spider-Man movie.
Good. I mean, it's because this movie...
That's okay. Take a break, guys.
Yeah, no, this movie already kind of walked in with the problem of, well, we know these people aren't going to be dead because there's these movies coming out.
Yeah.
So, you know, it wasn't, that was a missed opportunity, or that was a soiled opportunity right there. But, yeah, no, I do like how it sets up for basically everything else. Like, hey, Pepper put the suit on. Do you like Iron Maiden? That could happen. Oh, they have a daughter. Do you like Ironheart? Sure, he's came back and kicked more ass. Do you like that Ironheart?
Yeah, no, I
we got Falcon as Captain America, and that whole character arc, I mean, I'm excited for it for good reason, but I'm also like, man, Falcon as Captain America was one of the shittiest looking Captain Americas ever.
Well, yeah, they're hopefully going to work on that, cuz they are having a Falcon and Bucky series, which I like, cuz those two are like, even just their scene fighting Spider-Man in Civil War was enough to convince me that a buddy comedy with the two of them would work.
Basically, that is a buddy action comedy.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically Lethal Weapon in many ways.
It's more like Bad Boys, but yes, that's it.
Never. It should never be like Bad Boys. It can't hate humanity that much. It can't hate humanity as much as Michael Bay hates humanity.
As you know, Scott, Bad Boys 2 is the greatest movie that has ever been made.
Nick, now you're just speaking from your father's perspective, and you know. Yeah, so they've got Falcon and Winter Soldier. They've got WandaVision, which is what they're calling the Scarlet Witch and Vision series.
They may need to go back on that name.
They've also got a Hawkeye series where apparently he's training Kate Bishop.
Who, can we talk about how much of an edgelord Ronan is?
Ronan, yes. Honestly, if you just look at Ronan as kind of like, hey, DC, remember what you thought was cool about, like, Batman? Remember? Do you remember Zack Snyder? What you tried to do?
I was going to say, how 2002 high school edgelord can you get?
I know.
That appealed to that part of me. Then I was like, wait, this is fucking stupid.
Ronan calls out to the inner 13-year-old in all of us who just discovered what a samurai was. But what I'm really hoping is that, because Hawkeye actually has this great run of comics, I think they're written or drawn by Dave Aja, and they are amazing, because it's just Hawkeye just doing, like, dealing with mobsters and, like, just, like, low-level stuff, and people are like, you Avenger? He's like, yeah, but right now I gotta go talk to my landlord. Like, stuff like that, with his inner monologue. It's just a curse-happy inner monologue. So one of my favorites is that, like, it's literally him pulling the same kind of move where he does in the Avengers movie, where he's, like, busting out of a window and he's falling, but he doesn't have it this time. And it's just him going, shit, not good, definitely gonna break something, okay. Like, this is him through every single fight. So it's like him going through. So it's like him in a high speed chase where he's shooting arrows, and it's like, all right, hand me that one. He fires it off. It's like, it's explosive. He's like, I didn't mean that one. I meant the one not an explosive. It's just this idea of bumbling Hawkeye trying to train somebody new. I love it.
I would see Jeremy Renner be bumbling Hawkeye. Yeah, no, I'm up for that.
I mean, I think he's built for it. He's done enough serious acting in his time. He doesn't need to.
I mean, he started off as bumbling acting, as a bumbling Hawkeye, and being very self-aware of just, I can't remember which one it was, but
Age of Ultron.
He's just like, I'm just a fucking guy. I don't have superpowers. I just shoot.
I have a bow and arrow. None of this makes any sense. Yeah.
That was a wonderful moment.
Yes, exactly. And he's like, well, I'm going to go out there and do that because it's my job. Okay? All right. Now I'm going to barrel flip over this guy and shoot him over in the face.
Once again, I'm fighting robots with a bow and arrow.
Yeah, so we'll see where it ends up. Any other big highlight moments that we didn't talk about with you two?
Oh, fun fact, because I'm just full of these today.
Fun facts with Jamario. This is our new segment.
Hashtag fun facts. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. Oh, you're so wonderful. So,
this better be a good fact. Brought to you
by Geritol.
Oof. All of the geriatric. I'm right in that demographic. So, the soul stone scene.
Oh, yeah.
Apparently, as it was originally written, Hawkeye was supposed to be the one to die.
That makes sense to me. I mean, they kind of wrote it off that way.
Yeah, so that was supposed to be it, but what ended up happening, and this is a testament to kind of like how you were saying, like the Russos, they're not too good at certain types of scenes, but it came together anyway, is literally someone who was just on set stopped them, and they were just like, no, that's stupid. Like, you shouldn't, no, you should get, it should go this way instead. And they were like, you know what? They tried it out, and they're like, yeah, actually, that's way better. So
yeah, what do you think of them, of Black Widow being the one to take the fall, Nick?
I think it makes sense. I mean, her underlying motivation here was, like, when you look at her, she's just defeated as the head of S.H.I.E.L.D. when everyone is gone and she doesn't know what to do, and she's got this bunch of people that are answering to her, but really it's the end of the rope, that she would do literally anything to undo this. Whereas mm-hmm. Hawkeye is largely fighting, I mean, really for his family. Mm-hmm. To get his family back. Yeah. Like, in terms of the scope of the sacrifice, it makes sense to me that it's Black Widow, because that's her motivation.
Yeah.
Is to undo this universal catastrophe.
Yeah, no, it made sense to me too, and I did like the kind of the fake-out fight, even though they did like seven reversals as to who you thought was going to die. But I think there's two things. There's one argument I would put in for not doing it, I understand why they did, because essentially it is a payoff for Black Widow. She no longer has red in her ledger. That's like the ultimate, because like she's always been defined as like, I'm not worthy of having anything, right? Because I'm shit. Like, that seems to be what they've... It's interesting how this movie paid off a lot of Age of Ultron storylines. It's like, hey, Hawkeye's important because he is a man with a family. Like, right. And that's kind of why he's been a human anchor. So what happens when you take that away from him? Well, it's not
his... He goes and stabs Yakuza for 4 years.
Yeah. Like, he takes out every cartel, which are still apparently not that affected by the snap, but apparently. Anyway. But yeah, one thing that did bug me about the whole Soul Stone thing is that I really wanted some reversal to indicate that Thanos' approach was wrong. Does that make sense? Because the indication is that, oh, he did love Gamora. And I'm like, I don't like that.
You know what? That is the only... I don't like that. That's kind of the only plot hole. Not the only, there's a couple, but that's the biggest one that stood out to me is that to get the Soul Stone, you had to sacrifice something that was dear to you.
Yes.
And this, you know, in Infinity War, yeah, he gave up Gamora, who was the thing that he loved the most. And in this one, in Endgame, it was just like, oh, you have to sacrifice a soul for a soul. So someone brought up like, well, if that was the case, you know, why don't you just take a puppy and just throw it down there? Oh, there's a soul. Now we get the soul.
Yeah,
star.
Yeah, we didn't ask enough questions of Red Skull. Well, describing
this. You don't want to ask too many questions.
And then kind of going into it, the other plot hole that led with that as well, I mean, it's plot hole talk. That's also my second series, plot hole talk with Jamario. I feel like this one's a little bit more upbeat. This one's at the 4 o'clock hour.
Brought to you by Bubblegum.
Just bubblegum.
Just bubble yum.
All bubblegum. No, I prefer it.
All of bubblegum. Is Enigma knew what the conditions were for the Soul Stone, and she didn't tell Scarlet. She didn't just tell Black Widow.
Nebula?
I'm sorry. Why did I say Enigma? It's a long day. Nebula. She didn't tell them, just like, oh yeah, by the way.
I don't think she knew.
She did.
Oh, she did. She found
remember,
out. Because
remember,
right,
she...
Right. She's the one that figures out
She was, when she was on the...
Right, when she was fighting Thanos. That's right, she did.
And that's how she kind of got Gamora, like, planned to see the converter. Yeah. It was like, hey, you know what it needs, and you know how he gets it. This is what he does. So she knew, but still was just like, all right, cool, bye guys, have fun. Send only two of them. It's like, did you bring a puppy? No? Well...
Well, no, because in Avengers...
Infinity War,
Red Skull says explicitly you have to sacrifice something you love. Like, that is established.
Yeah, and then maybe the rules change slightly. What I was kind of hoping for is... I understand why they did it like they did, and we talked about all that. And I do like the fact that Hawkeye apparently like could basically held off all of Thanos' minions while holding the gauntlet like by himself for a while, which is pretty awesome. But what I was kind of hoping for was something akin to like they both kind of go out together. Like nobody's gonna make a decision. Well, they both kind of make the decision, and they can't actually disable the other person, as it were. So they both kind of go down, but then they both come back because, oh, you're actually willing to make a personal sacrifice. It nullifies the idea that you have to lose something to get it. Right. And that would be and the reason I like that is because it's complete refutation of the idea that Thanos truly cared about anything but his goal, and that he truly cared about Gamora. Because he might believe that he felt love for Gamora, but I think the messaging is a bit weird on that one. Because if the idea is like, oh yeah, he definitely loved, you know, he definitely loved her, then it's like, well then, I don't know. It seems like he loves his mission more.
I mean, it plays a little bit more into the flawed premise, you know, that that honest intentions, that the mad Titan aspect of like, I love this thing so much, but I gotta see this through. It's for the greater good. It's for the end.
Yeah.
You know, he's got, by that point, he's kind of broken and And if we can take it with that aspect, it segues really well into the start of Endgame of just like, so, yeah, it happened. I'm just chilling here.
Yeah, I did it, and now I made sure you can't undo it. So
and I decided that there's nothing else for this, so I just destroyed them. I don't really need anything else. I'm just going to sit here on my farm, and that's really it. Okay. Like, yeah. he was fine with just like, I did it, and I don't need to see the profit of it. You know, I don't care what happens to me at this point.
Yeah, that's fair. Any other moments that you liked? Anything stood out to you, Nick?
Can we talk about girl power?
Oh, yes. The girl power moment. Complete pandering. I loved every second of it.
It was the best pander of the whole movie. Yes. Of a movie full of pandering. This was my favorite
pander. Yes, this is my favorite pander, yes. Like, Captain Marvel didn't need help. But I'm glad she got help.
She by herself could have wiped the floor with the rest of them. But it doesn't matter because...
No, it does not matter. Yeah, because we get to see Valkyrie on a goddamn, like, Pegasus.
Oh my god, I was so glad I got to see Valkyrie doing Valkyrie stuff because... Mm-hmm. Oh my god.
Yeah, that was pretty great. And I also like that... I think this has been something like, because we obviously had Pepper Potts in as Rescue. But I like that she's like not just... Because Rescue... Historically, it's just not so. It's not a full Iron Man type suit. Just kind of like, oh, it's here to like kind of literally to come in and save civilians. And so to be like, oh no, it's Lady Iron Man, right. And just busting through everything is pretty great. But yeah, total pandering, but I loved it. The last little moment that everything with Peter Parker, once he actually gets on the battlefield, is pretty great. Fantastic. So, like, including the hot potato with the Infinity Gauntlet. So we get T'Challa, who gets to slice and dice his way through, which is pretty great. And then, of course, do the... I don't know what to call it, but every time he unleashes the kinetic energy, that little purple blast.
I mean, that giant... Let's just call it a ground pound.
Yes. Full-on ground pound. You
know, down back two in Mortal Kombat.
Yes. So and then, again, the auto-kill feature. Which is a callback to Spider-Man Homecoming. And then possibly one of my favorite moments that just reminds me that, well, not reminds me, but it reinforces in my mind that Tom Holland is my favorite actor to play Spider-Man, live action Spider-Man, is where he's like covered in the Thanos goon corpses and Captain Marvel like kind of uncovers him, his mask is off. He's got, like, blood on his face and, like, his nose. He's just, like, half shaking. He's just going, she's like, and then Captain Marvel's just like, hi there. Hi, I'm Peter Parker. Hi, Peter Parker. Like, that delivery and exchange was so good. I just thought that was so perfect based on both.
He's doing such a good job playing that side of Peter Parker that we love, where it's like, he may not be a snarky asshole, but he's a dork.
Yes.
Yeah, he's just weak. Like, he just reads everything just a little bit wrong.
Yeah.
Like, because, I don't know, like, that was the thing about, that never jive with me about Tobey Maguire, is that Tobey Maguire just, just felt depressing most of the time. I'm kind of like, why is anybody friends with him? He seems like the worst. Like, it's like, and partially that's just kind of, honestly, Tobey Maguire's vocal quality is a big part of that, but Tom Holland has like a youthful energy to what he's doing, so it sounds more
instead of a permanent whine.
I'm sorry, yeah.
Yeah, it feels way more genuine instead of, again, hey, we don't have to have this guy just be a sarcastic, snarky asshole that just delivers good one-liners all the time.
Well, and that's why I loved the three main Spider-Man voices in Into the Spider-Verse, which are Chris Evans, Jake Johnson, and Shemaik Moore, all have that little level of like, even if like they're still likable, even if they're, you know, various points of like depressing or cracking jokes or, you know, awkward. So yeah, but that was definitely one of my favorites. Apparently that's an indication that it's tea time. And then I think the podcast is over.
It seems that way.
It does seem that way. But thank you so much, Nick and Jamario. Ben dipped out a little bit earlier.
We're better than him.
He's mad because I called that Scarlet Witch, I mean that, not Scarlet Witch, that Black Widow would get wiped out. And I won.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You
I called
won that
from the stands like several podcasts ago.
Called a shot for death.
It is a hollow victory.
It is a very hollow victory.
But it's okay. I'm... I'm kind of glad that they did a really good job of kind of wrapping up what was like a decade long 22 movie epic series. Each of the actors that pretty much aren't coming back got good endings. They, you know, there wasn't any snubs. There was no.
Well, and yeah.
No shade thrown.
No shade thrown. No talks about, like, no digs at Terrence Howard. Notice I didn't go back to Iron Man 1, but.
they avoided the.
But
the
and then
mess
we also
of that.
And then we also have, honestly, my favorite realm of possibility: Guardians of the Galaxy plus Thor.
Which, yes, please.
Which, just
thank
please.
You.
Which, give.
I wouldn't James be surprised
Gunn
if that's how they
script,
do it.
James Gunn writing a script for Chris Hemsworth is one of my favorite ideas in recent memory.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's how they do it because, you know, at the end of Endgame, it's like, where's Gamora?
Yeah, they're searching for Gamora, and then I feel like we just need to have.
It'd be fine if Gamora, you know, as much
need,
I want
they
her
need
in
to, they need to make calls to old Captain America just so we can have the three Chrises in scenes together. That's all I really want.
Yeah, I mean, I'm all for Fat Thor still.
Yes,
maintain more Fat Thor.
More Fat Thor because he's killing our workout goals every time we see him without a shirt for real. So you got to cut that shit out. All right, well, thank you for listening, everybody. Thank you, fellas, for dropping in.
For sure.
All right, we'll catch you next time.
Bye.
We love you.
This has been episode 23 of Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie Podcast. Thank you so much for listening. Special thanks to my guests, Ben, Jamario, and Nick, for joining me. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe wherever you get your podcast. And don't forget to join our Facebook group, Scott's Self-Indulgent Movie World, for the latest episodes and for the latest movie reviews. Have fun, everybody.